Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 262 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. This podcast should be relatively short. It's the Clutch TB podcast. And again, if you listen to this, you should pretty much be able to, I would hopefully, get all your TB questions right on a test. And again, just a reminder, from the 21st to the 23rd of this month, that's next week, Monday to Wednesday, on the 21st, I have a test taking strategies class. On the 22nd and 23rd, I have a comprehensive step 2 CK review class, right? So if you want more details on that or you want to sign up, there's still a few spots remaining. Just shoot me an email via the website and then we'll go from there. Okay, let's jump right into it. So the thing is, if you suspect that a person has TB, right? Or if they need to get, if they're trying to get you to pick a diagnostic test for TB on your exam, always, like, if you want to, like, screen, right? Let's put it this way, right? If you want to screen, you can do one of two things on your test, right? You can do the TB skin test, or you can do the interferon gamma release assay. Either one is perfectly acceptable on exams, right? Either one is perfectly acceptable on exams. Now, let me tell you something. If they give you a specific situation where the person, right? So this is like one specific scenario, right? Usually they won't give you both as answer choices, like, oh, TB skin test, interferon gamma release assay. But let me tell you one specific scenario you may see on an exam, right? If they give you a scenario of a person that's coming from a foreign country, right? Like an immigrant or something, especially someone that came from a foreign country less than 5 years ago. And then they're trying to get you to screen that person for TB. And in the answer choices, you see an answer choice that says, especially if the person has gotten the BCG vaccine, right? They'll throw in this thing, person has gotten the BCG vaccine, and you want to screen the person for TB, they'll give you an answer choice that says TB skin test. And then they give you another answer choice that says interferon gamma release assay. If you see that, pick interferon gamma release assay, right? So if a person has received the BCG vaccine back in the day, and they give you both answer choices, the TB skin test or the interferon gamma release assay, pick the answer choice that says to do the interferon gamma release assay, right? It's just more helpful in those people. Also, if they give you a question where the person doesn't follow up with their physician regularly, the last time they saw their physician was like 5 years ago or something crazy, right? Those are the kinds of people, you know, they will very likely not come back in 48 to 72 hours to have their TB skin test results read. For those people, administer the interferon gamma release assay in those specific populations, right? And the thing, though, I will say, though, is whether a person has gotten the BCG vaccine or not, it doesn't matter, right? The TB skin test results are always interpreted the exact same way, right? They are always interpreted the exact same way, right? And again, don't forget your millimeters of induration, right, for the TB skin test, right? So if a person, remember, 5 millimeters of induration is positive in a person that is, I think the big thing you want to keep in mind here is a person that is immunocompromised, right? So what are examples of people that are immunocompromised? What are different vignettes they can create on a test, right? It can be a person that has HIV. That's the classic one, right? But it can also be a little more exotic, especially on these newer NBME exams, right? They'll give you something about a person that has had a transplant of some sort and the person is on immunosuppression, right? Or the person is getting like chronic prednisone therapy for some autoimmune disease, right? Or if you're a person that recently contacted someone that is known to have active TB, you definitely fall under that 5 millimeter induration category, right? And then the 10 millimeters of induration, right? This one are, I think of like high-risk people and people in groups, right? So high-risk people and people in groups. What do I mean by that, right? So let's say you're an immigrant and you just came from a foreign country. Again, less than 5 years ago. That's usually like the cutoff, right? If you're an IV drug user, right, you fall in this 10 millimeter category, right? If you're a person that lives in a crowded environment, right? Prison, jail, right? Nursing home, right? Hospital person, something like that, right? Those people also, again, go that 10 millimeter category. And again, if you're a healthcare worker, right? If you're a healthcare worker, you definitely fall within this 10 millimeter purview, right? And then 15 millimeters is positive in every person, right? It's positive in every person. Now, one thing I want to say is, and again, unfortunately, you do actually need to commit this stuff to memory, right? Now, let me tell you one thing right off the bat. You can never, if you remember this rule, it will save you from a lot of pain and heartache on your test. You can never differentiate between active TB and latent TB by virtue of a TB skin test or an interferon gamma release assay. Fix this fact in your mind permanently. You can absolutely never differentiate between active TB or latent TB by a TB skin test or an interferon gamma release assay, right? Now, one thing I would say here is, really, there are two diagnoses of TB you want to essentially make on your test. You want to make the diagnosis of a person having active TB or a person having latent TB, because those people get different kinds of treatments, right? So, for example, if a person has latent TB, they need to meet three conditions on an NBIM exam. I'll say this again. For a person to be diagnosed with latent TB, they need to meet three conditions on an NBIM. One, they must have a positive TB skin test or interferon gamma release assay. That's criteria one. They must have a positive TB skin test or a positive interferon gamma release assay. That's one. Two, their chest X-ray must be negative. Three, they must not have any systemic manifestations of TB. They shouldn't be having cough, hemoptysis, night sweats, weight loss, or any of that crap. Okay? You need to meet those three criteria to be diagnosed with latent TB on an NBME. Okay? And if a person has latent TB on an NBME, guess what? You treat it with this regimen. This is the regimen that will probably cover 99% of your bases. But just for completeness sake, I'll talk about the other regimens, right? The primary regimen used on NBM exams for latent TB is isoniazid for 9 months. I don't care what you've read in another Q-bank or whatever, right? This is what the NBME goes after. Isoniazid for 9 months plus vitamin B6, right? Isoniazid plus B6 for 9 months, right? But one other thing you can do in some select cases, right? Especially people that don't have like HIV or, you know, pretty normal people. You can actually do isoniazid for 6 months plus B6, right? You can even do rifampin for 4 months. Just straight up rifampin for 4 months or INH for 6 months. But usually people that are immunocompromised HIV folks, you do the 9 months of INH plus B6. But again, with that said, on an NBM exam, what I want you to pick, which will be correct like 99.9% of the time, is isoniazid for 9 months plus vitamin B6, right? And then what tells you that a person has active TB? Active TB, right, is going to be a person that, again, has symptoms, right? The big thing is symptoms, right? Cough, right? Chest pain, hemoptysis, right? Fever, chills, night sweats, those B symptoms. And they will have it for a long period of time, right? It can be like a TSA agent. It can be a person that is an immigrant, right? Or it can be a person that just traveled out of the country recently, like, you know, over the last couple months or couple years and came back not too long ago, right? Those people can have active TB, right? Those people can have active TB. And in general, if you suspect the person has active TB, right, you know, you typically want to do, you want to get something, you want to get some kind of sputum, right? You can do a bronchoalveolar lavage to get that sputum, or you can do an induced sputum sample, right? You can do an induced sputum sample, right? And typically, when you do that, right, you're going to subject that sputum sample to the AFB smear, right? Like the acid-fast bacilli smear, right? You're going to culture those things, right? In fact, remember, if you have a negative AFB smear, it doesn't rule out TB, right? Remember, the gold standard for diagnosing TB, believe it or not, is actually sputum culture, right? But it takes weeks for TB to grow, right? It takes weeks for TB to grow, right? It takes weeks for TB to grow. And one thing I would say is, if for some reason they give you a question about a person that has a negative AFB smear, right? And they say for your next best step, right? And you don't see an answer that says to do a culture, go ahead and do like PCR testing, right? You know, another name for PCR and NBM exams, right, is NAAT, right? Like a nucleic acid amplification test. Go ahead and do that on the sputum to diagnose a TB, right? And how do we treat active TB? Easy, right? Active TB, we usually treat it, right, with a combination of RIPE, right? So rifampin, isoniazid, pyrazinamide, and ethambutol, right? You give these four agents plus vitamin B6 for the first 2 months. And then after that, for the remaining 4 months, because it's 6 months of therapy total, right? So the first 2 months, rifampin, isoniazid, pyrazinamide, and ethambutol, right? Plus B6 for 2 months. And then for the remaining 4 months, you give rifampin and isoniazid plus B6. Basically, whenever you're on isoniazid, you got to be on B6, right? You got to be on B6. Okay. And one weird, bizarre thing that your friends at the NBME are beginning to go after these days, they're beginning to go, especially again, the newer exams, right? There are some weird things they are beginning to touch on these days, right? So, like, for example, right, like, they would want you to know criteria that means that, oh, the, you know, this person no longer has infection, you know, they can be exposed to other human beings, even if they are still being treated. Obviously, you're not going to quarantine that person for a month, right? That's ridiculous, right? So basically, you must have been on adequate therapy for 2 weeks, for at least 14 days, right? Just kind of think of the coronavirus guidelines, right? Like, oh, be quarantined for 2 weeks, right? And you see the person is getting clinically better, right? And then they must have had like 3 negative sputum smears, right? Like consecutive sputum smears, AFB smears, 3 must be negative. You need to meet those criteria for you to say, okay, this person doesn't need to be placed in quarantine. This person doesn't need to be isolated anymore. We can go ahead and let this person out into the wild, right? Now, some preventive medicine things that they love to test on exams, right, are things you're supposed to do before you start certain TB regimens, right? So the thing is, before you start put a person on pyrazinamide, you need to check their levels of uric acid, right? Because remember, pyrazinamide can trigger gout, right? It can trigger gout. That's one of those weird high yield things you want to know, right? And then people that are being studied on ethambutol, remember, those people need some kind of ophthalmologic testing, right? So you need to check their visual acuity, check their color vision and all that stuff, right? Before you start them on ethambutol, right? Just one of those weird, bizarre things you want to keep in mind for exams, right? Then remember, right, TB can, many times on NBM exams, if they show you a chest x-ray with TB, you can see the cavitary lesion, right? The person can have like a unilateral pleural effusion, right? Remember, people can also have like unilateral hilar lymphadenopathy, right? They can even have this miliary TB, right, where you see all these dots, right, in their lungs, right? These are things you want to be able to identify on imaging, on an MBME exam, right? Those are things you all want to be able to identify. And then, remember, TB can also cause problems in the brain, right? Like TB meningitis, right? Remember, people that have TB meningitis, you check the CSF, right? The CSF, classically, right? The thing that will happen is you'll notice that they have a ton, like elevated, very elevated pressures, right? So high CSF opening pressures, you see a ton of lymphocytes, right? So their white cells will be up, proteins will be up, and the white cells will be predominantly lymphocytes, right? And again, the way you treat TB meningitis is the exact same way you treat regular TB, right? And again, remember, the glucose will be low, protein will be high, stuff like that, right? And usually the way you treat the way you deal with that CSF where you suspect the person has TB meningitis is to just do PCR of the CSF. That's actually the best test in diagnosing a TB meningitis. But if they say do an AFB smear of the CSF, that's also acceptable on MBM exams as well, right? And then don't forget that TB can also cause osteomyelitis, right? So if they tell you about a person that has like back pain, right? And they have all these TB risk factors, right? Think about Pott's disease, right? Remember, TB can cause a vertebral kind of osteomyelitis, right? Can cause a vertebral kind of osteomyelitis. And then one last thing I want to say, I guess, that may help you on an exam with regards to these Mycobacterium species, right? Don't forget Mycobacterium avium, right? Again, remember, if your CD4 count is less than 50, back in the day, we used to prophylax against those, but we don't do that anymore, right? MAC prophylaxis is no longer recommended, right? But the thing is, MAC can show up in non-HIV people on MBM exams, right? And usually, it'll be the classic presentation, right, of MAC in a non-HIV person, on especially the newer MBM exams, right? It'll be like an old woman, old white female, right? Very thin, right? And they'll usually have something that tells you that they have like some connective tissue thing going on, right? Or they may have like some chest wall anomaly, right? They can have like pectus excavatum, they can have like scoliosis. Or if you see a person that has like TB style symptoms and the person has mitral valve prolapse, I want you to think about a MAC infection. And really the way we treat MAC infections on exams is with macrolides, right? So you treat MAC with a macrolide, right? So you can give them like erythromycin, clarithromycin or whatever, right? Make sure those people's QT intervals are not super prolonged, right? Make sure the QT intervals are not super prolonged. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and stop here. Please subscribe to this podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts, it's on Google Play, it's on Spotify. Please subscribe. I also have a YouTube channel, Divine Intervention USMLE Podcasts and Videos. And then I also have a website, right? DivineInterventionPodcast.com. So please subscribe. I wish you all the very best. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all the support. And God bless you. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll see you next time.